Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Bottoming, the LGBTQ mental health podcast about rock bottoming and beyond.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BottomingPod or visit BottomingPodcast.com for more content relating to each episode.
We've also added a support page to the website to direct you to the right place if you're struggling or need someone to talk to.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Hello,
I am Matthew.
And I am Brendan, and our pronouns are he and him.
So we're back for episode 2 of season 4.
Yeah, a little bit later than the normal running of episodes, because as we mentioned in the first episode, we're doing things slightly different this season, where we're just feeding you as and when we feel like it, alright? Alright?
It is Pride Month, and we didn't want to overwhelm people with things, because there's enough going on at the minute, to be completely honest, and not all of it's good either, so no. You know,
drag her,
no, as in the news, silly.
Okay.
So we thought we wanted to wait for the right time, the right person, the right content, you know.
Also, like, we for the last couple of years we've done, well no, actually just last year we've done very amazing,
if we say so ourselves,
like specials episodes, yeah, for Pride Month, LGBT History Month, even this LGBT History Month.
You've been fed.
You've been more than fed. But also, what we do is all year round. We're not just a rainbow wash, mm-hmm, are we?
Mm-hmm. You could do with a wash. Anyway, what?
Actually, I have just changed my tyre, so I actually could do with a wash.
We are so pleased this week to be speaking, mm-hmm, to Nancy Kelly, who is CEO of Stonewall UK. Yeah, we've wanted to speak to Stonewall for a long time. We've discussed Stonewall and the work they do, amongst many other things, mm-hmm, and it was a really fantastic interview. But yeah, before we get into that, Miss Brenda, mm-hmm, how are you?
I am very good. I'm actually going to start with some news about my university,
mm-hmm,
because you know what, so me and Matthew were actually talking about LinkedIn posts a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's an episode on LinkedIn influencers on a podcast called Violating Community Guidelines by Brittany Broski and Sarah Shower. Young influencers, but love them. They're so funny. Anyway, they talk about LinkedIn people and how they have these stories and they write the posts for a certain type of audience where it has like a very specific arc. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to say this next news in that kind of arc. So when I was in school, and I was very mediocre, not very academic at all. I couldn't really do maths. Statistics was my worst scoring GCSE. Fast forward, what,
many
15
years
later, I've achieved an 80% in a statistics exam for university with my master's. Never give up on yourself is the moral of the story.
There we go. It's never too late.
It's never too late.
Smash those statistics.
Yeah. And become the person you never thought you would be or wanted to be.
But no, very big congrats.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I really have worked. And I know I make jokes all the time about jobs and no jobs, but you really are smashing it with uni. I am very, very proud of you.
Thank
you. Yeah, very well done.
Thank you. Yeah, very shocked, but very, very happy about that. And I had my final presentation as well, which was good. Yet to be marked on that, but, you know, we'll see.
It is what it is.
It is what it is, and what will be what we will be, and que sera, sera. So yeah, that's all going good. Pop culture wise, because
hit me.
Sometimes we talk about that. The new Stranger Things, I have to say, is fantastic. Specific scene, well, the whole season. Not to give away any spoilers, because I won't do that. But it speaks on and touches upon themes of depression, anxiety, past trauma, very, very well. And there's a very specific scene, which is like, well, very specific episode 4, where you see this character kind of going further and further into herself and like not addressing her issues with the people that she's closest to. And people around her are just like, talk to us. Mm-hmm. And she's still not talking to them. And then she gets into this whole thing with the bad guy. And then there's a certain resolution, and it's just very, very emotional, and it's very touching. And I was an absolute blubbering mess. I was sitting with my cats. I was like, cats, come and love me. Daddy needs some love.
And this is the scene. I haven't seen season 4 yet, but this is the scene, the Kate Bush song, isn't it? That has sent it to number one. Absolute queen, the Cheers.
Yeah, and the specific like remix they did of it as well, where there's like violins coming in. Oh god, I'm getting chills, and it's just it's so good, and it's just like a very powerful scene of determination and like fighting for yourself. Because when you're in the darkest parts, as we know, it is hard to fight and to get out and to give yourself a chance or a second chance. So yeah, really, really recommend that. And I'll say that's it for me.
Yeah.
How are you, babes?
Yeah, I'm good. I am just off the back of a 2.5 week holiday. I wasn't away for 2.5 weeks, but, you know, Platy Jubes gave us a long weekend, didn't it?
I mean, so, you say you weren't away for 2.5 weeks, but it felt like a lifetime.
Yeah, it did. I was away for 10 days, went to Primavera, hardly know her. It was gorgeous. That one is specifically for you, Alistair and Jamie. Yeah, it was, honestly, it was so, so much fun. There was so many different groups of people that were there that we ended up seeing. Highlights were, I will say, Charlie XCX, again, amazing. The Grimes DJ set, which included...
I am very jealous of that.
All I Want for Christmas and Enya. Just incredible. And also Fred Again, which is one of my favourite albums of last year. And yeah, just seeing Fred Again live was unbelievable. It was just honestly one of the best things I've ever seen live. So yeah, that was amazing. And then me and Sam needed the holiday from the holiday, so we went to Sitges for a few days afterwards as well, just to eat lots of food and suntan. So that was amazing.
Suntan,
sunbathe. But yeah, I'm feeling very, very grateful to have had that time off, because I think it was a long time needed. So yeah, feeling quite refreshed now. I am back to work. I'm going to Rwanda soon with work for our big team retreat, which I'm very excited about because I think it's going to be amazing. We've got loads of really amazing things lined up there. And also hopefully going to speak to some LGBT activists and organisations while I'm there as well. So hopefully a future episode, we'll have some of those conversations.
Well, now we've got our cute little dictaphone.
That is gorgeous. It's so sneaky, isn't it? So tiny, but tiny but powerful. Yeah. Little dictaphone. And yeah, I'm feeling very pumped today because I've had the new Beyonce song on all morning. She said house, disco. She said we support striking, we support the union, join the union, resign, fight the system. She said all of them things, and Big Frieda obviously kills it as per usual. So 100%. Yeah, I'm feeling very pumped. And also we just had our project with the Museum of Liverpool go live
today of all days,
this very day. So alongside all of the other things going on, now you can go to the Museum of Liverpool in the Pierhead. You can go and listen to us even more guide around the museum for the LGBTQ audio trail. So we will link in the description to find out more, but if you're there, go and see it, listen, let us know. If you're planning a trip, obviously go and see it and let us know.
And even if you're not in Liverpool, you can check out the trail and our gorgeous audio snippets on Museum of Liverpool's website, which is liverpoolmuseums.org.uk/LGBTQ-audio-trail.
What was your favourite item?
I think I said this before, but I think the biscuit jar, Huntley and Palmer's biscuit jar, just because it was a real curveball. Like some of the others, it's kind of like...
Yeah, that's gay.
Yeah, exactly. A pride flag, you know, rainbow laces. It's quite there. But Huntley and Palmer's biscuit jar, didn't know what was coming. And I loved the story behind it. So I think that's my favourite. How about yours?
I would say the same, but also just to be different now, I'll say the Sonic Youth display.
Yes.
Just because I think the whole underground club movement that they've got going in the Northwest, Liverpool and beyond is amazing. So... yeah, I would say that.
Stunning.
But check it out, let us know, and we're very proud of it. So, there we go.
But of course, onto the meaty part of the episode. We have our gorgeous chat with Nancy Kelly, CEO of Stonewall. Yeah, we're really pleased to be able to speak with Nancy, actually. As many of you will know, Stonewall has been in the press a fair amount recently and under a lot of scrutiny in just the most like ridiculous way, considering the amount of good that they do. And so it was really nice to be able to talk to Nancy about not only that and her reactions to that, but also some of the great and positive things that they're still remaining and still managing to do despite all of that.
I think Nancy even says it herself, and I know many people share the view Stonewall isn't perfect. And I know lots in the community, you know, some things they do people agree with and some not. But the fact of the matter is that they have brought enormous change to the movement in the UK. They do amazing work. And I think more than ever, especially the last few years with the anti-trans and gender critical movement, seeing how LGBT organisations, all inclusive of trans people, have all come together has been really powerful. And that it shows that obviously that's working, because that's why they're getting so much hate and being attacked in the press, because it doesn't fit what the angle that they're going for with culture wars. So big up Stonewall, all of the team there. I know a few people that have had a bit of a hard time there, so yeah, keep up the amazing work, and thanks again, Nancy, for chatting to us. So,
without further ado, here is Nancy.
My name's Nancy Kelly. My pronouns are she and her, and I'm the chief exec of Stonewall.
So, thank you so much for joining us. Before we get into some of the questions we've got, can you give us little bit of info and what your background is and what led you to taking on this role at Stonewall?
So I've spent most of my career in the voluntary sector, mostly in campaigning and policy roles, so working on kind of social justice issues. So I've worked a lot on poverty for years, anti-poverty work, and on refugee issues, and children's rights, and those sorts of things. So I've always worked in that kind of social justice space. And Stonewall is an organisation that is just incredibly close to my heart. Like all other queer people, I spent most of my adult life having lots of opinions about Stonewall, but also feeling kind of really attached to it. So having the kind of opportunity to lead a human rights charity, and specifically to lead this human rights charity, is pretty incredible.
And how do you prepare to take on a role like this one? I mean, knowing the organisation has always been in the spotlight in the way it has.
So, I mean, I think the short answer is, I think I was quite naive about it. So I've got a lot of very relevant work experience. So I was the deputy chief exec of a much bigger charity before I came to Stonewall, for instance. And, you know, I've had quite a varied career. And so I thought, you know, I'm kind of ready for this. And I remember approaching it very naively through the lens of, well, it's a very high profile charity, but it's just a kind of medium sized voluntary sector organisation. And I kind of know how those work. With a little bit of a side order of, I'm a very resilient person, so I know I can kind of roll with the punches. And it was very naive. I remember a couple of weeks after I started my job, Linda Riley from Diva took me out for a very fancy lunch at the Ivy. It was the first time I've ever been to such a thing. And she sort of said, you've chosen to sit a very hot seat, and kind of I'll support you. And still at this point I was like, well, yeah, but you know. And yeah, so I think I was as prepared as you can be, in the sense of I had a lot of relevant skills and experience, but I was pretty naive about what it would actually be like.
It seems as well to have just each year just have got more worse. The spotlight. Yeah, I was going to frame it a bit nicer, but yeah, it's just worse. Got worse every year. The focus on it has got worse, hasn't it, every year?
More challenging.
Yeah.
Complicated. So, I mean, I've been at Stonewall just over 2 years now, which people will say things like in Stonewall years, that's like a decade. But we definitely have kind of ebbs and flows. And ebbs and flows in terms of the kind of negative attention that can be directed towards, most importantly, the communities that we represent, but also the organization. And I mean, I guess we're living through an anti-trans moral panic at the minute. I mean, there's no other way really to describe it, I think. And Stonewall is just the sort of most visible advocate of trans people's humanity and their rights. And so this is an inevitable consequence for us of being an LGBTQ plus organization that tries to stand with its trans siblings. So it's a sort of, when I talk to people who, including some of our founders who were involved in Stonewall or involved in LGBTQ rights work in the kind of 80s and 90s, early 90s, they say it's as bad. Sometimes they say it's worse than then. And I think that's probably right. So it's not an easy time to do the work, but it's an important time to do the work is how I would see it.
Yeah. I mean, we've, across several of our episodes, spoken about the impact that media coverage around LGBTQ issues can have on the community, especially trans people. We've spoken to many people and we've seen kind of firsthand how that impacts some of the guests we've spoken to. I guess from the Stonewall side, how have you seen this play out, maybe in how you've had to react or respond to some of these things? How has that looked from your side?
So I guess there's a couple of things. Like you feel an incredible degree of responsibility, because we're one of the few organizations that gets the chance to speak to the media. Mm-hmm. It just puts huge pressure on all of the decisions you make. Like, do you give a comment? If you give a comment, what do you say? You know, do you agree to go on a particular program? You know, if you do, what do you say? Particularly for us, we've got a lot of trans staff, but I'm a cis woman. We're a cis-led charity. So there's a lot of kind of, you feel a huge sense of responsibility, and the press is broadly speaking, pretty, I think critical would be entirely fair. Hostile is mostly fair.
Yeah.
So you don't have that kind of margin of appreciation, right? Like, everything you say is going to be gone over with a fine tooth comb. So I think that puts a lot of pressure on you. And I think that for staff, you know, if you don't work, and I think this is true of anyone in the movement, right? This isn't unique to Stonewall. If you don't work in the LGBTQ+ movement, then you have choices about protecting yourself from what's going on in the external environment. Mm-hmm. If you do work in our movement, or if you do things like, I mean, I would consider Bottoming Podcast part of that, right? Like, you live in this world, right? Mm. It's really hard to protect yourself. You can't kind of take a week off from what's going on in the external environment, because the external environment is kind of your job. Mm. And so I do, you know, you do see, and it's no different at Stonewall, queer people across the movement, and particularly trans people across the movement, kind of really struggling with exposure to an environment that's pretty, pretty toxic.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, 100, like, I've spoken about working at Tonic House, and obviously with this podcast and stuff, I work in communications, and I had to take a step back from that purely for that reason, because before that I was at another LGBT focused organization, and it just becomes every waking minute. And I know I know some of your staff and the amazing work that they've done, some of the interviews that I've watched you handle. And I think, as you said, like, for a lot of people, maybe a lot of people that listen to this that don't work in this sector, maybe understand the issues, and they can see it, but they don't have to have the face to the front of it every single day. And I think that's just something we always try and reiterate, is like, it's an active choice to stay away from it, but we now, I think, need people to maybe pay a bit more attention, because I know it's scary and it's difficult to get involved in, but we need more people to
stand up. I agree. And I think, you know, that doesn't mean people have to obsessively read all of it, but it does mean that people need to pay attention to what activists within the movement are saying, and understand that it's very real. Mm. And I think that, I guess, in the context of the kind of very sort of focused anti-trans kind of public conversation, it's kind of remembering that the general public's actually pretty trans inclusive, pretty positive about trans people, but the kind of media and political environment, I increasingly feel really frustrated, not with people who are actively transphobic, but with just most cis people who take one look at this and go, this is too difficult, it's a bit icky, I feel a bit uncomfortable. Like, I know it's nasty, and it's nasty, so I'm going to stay away from it. And we as cis people need to stand up. You know, trans population's tiny. It's tiny, and it's so vulnerable. And we need to say it's not okay to treat trans people like that, and not kind of opt out of saying that, because it feels a bit awkward sometimes.
Yeah.
What kind of conversations do you have internally, if any, about protecting the staff's mental well-being during all of this? Because obviously burnout is a very huge thing and can impact everyone in all kinds of spheres. But when it's kind of targeting your personal identity as well as the career that you're in, it can be like compounding, right?
Yeah, completely. So I'll kind of talk in very general terms, because obviously people's privacy is really important around these issues of kind of mental health and well-being. So I think that I guess the first point to think about is that unlike a lot of organisations, we are majority LGBTQ plus in our staff group, right? So we're 80% plus, I think we're close to 90% queer at Stonewall. And we know that our community has twice the rate of mental health problems anyway. So we because of the experience of discrimination and oppression, so we know that kind of that we are a staff pool that already kind of bring to this work that experience of discrimination and victimization that will very often have had an impact on our mental health. And as you say, then through the work, as it is at the minute, we're exposed to a lot of homophobia and biphobia and transphobia, as well as other things. You know, it's literally our job for some of us to persuade people to think differently. So by definition, that means we talk to people who can have quite unpleasant views. And so that is, you know, that on top of what we've been talking about, which is you kind of can't turn your kind of face away from the news, is incredibly difficult. So we do try really hard to support our staff's well-being. It is a struggle. You know, I wouldn't want to sit here and say, oh, it's great, it's really easy, it's a breeze. It isn't, it's hard. We've got a really, really active staff network that works on mental health and well-being, partner with kind of mental health first aiders, we're doing some targeted work around kind of suicide prevention this year. We're about to consult on trialing a 9-day fortnight where you pay people for 10 days and they work 9 days. There's a lot of evidence that that's great for well-being and it's just as productive as paying for 10 and getting 10 days of time. So we're really keen to keep looking for ways to help people kind of keep a good balance, look after their own mental health. But it's tricky. It is tricky.
Yeah. I guess on the topic of, you know, anti-LGBT media coverage generally, I mean, the rights have been under attack in Europe and the US in recent years.
Yeah.
What effective ways, if any, have you found to remain resilient during this time, as well as ensuring that people and other organisations you work with are also taking care of themselves?
So I think a ton about the fact that we're part of a movement and that's all we are. And that I'm, you know, I've got the privilege to lead an organisation, but I'm just one person and that's all I am. And I find that hugely comforting. You know, I think about, I sort of construct the job basically as my job is to pick up this rock and move it a bit further down the road. And there are generations before me that did that. They collectively picked up this rock of oppression and homophobia and biphobia and transphobia, and they moved it a bit. And there are people coming after me who are going to pick the rock up and move it a bit further. And I think that helps, it kind of helps keep you out of a savior mode. And it also helps, for me, it helps me, you know, I sleep, I get up, I go again. I have a hard day, I sleep, I get up and I go again, because I don't have to think about how do I win or how do we win. I only have to think about what's the next right thing to do, what shifts the rock. And I find a lot of comfort in that. And I think that's, you know, that's what it means to be part of a movement. Like, you know, it means all of us collectively, you know, doing our best to shift a really complex social picture. And that's why I've got such confidence that the picture will shift. We will get there. Not because any one organization or any one person wins, but because we will all keep working together, we'll keep picking the rock up and pushing it a bit further down the road.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really nice way to think of it as well, because it can be overwhelming when you think, I'm just this one person and all of this stuff's happening, how can I fix this and what do I say to this, and before you know it you're like in despair.
Sitting in a corner having a cry. I also think, and I think perhaps because it's Pride Month, I'm thinking more about that. There is something about just standing and being visible. Like, even when we don't know the right thing to say, even when we don't know the right thing to do, saying this isn't right, the way that LGBTQ people are being treated here isn't right, whether we're talking about LGBTQ plus refugees kind of and the risk that they be sent for sent to somewhere like Rwanda, where they're not safe when they mm-hmm. come here for safety, or whether we're talking about, you know, trans children and young people and not getting included in school, or whether we're talking about, you know, lesbians and bi women having to pay like 20 grand plus to get IVF mm-hmm. that straight people get on the NHS, right? Even when we don't know exactly what the fix is, it matters that we visibly say this mm-hmm. isn't fair, this isn't equitable, this isn't the kind of world I want to live in. And I think that's as true of activists as it is of kind of people who are just going about their day to day.
Yeah. I think over the last few years, it's been on the community side of it. It has, I think, been very clear that lots of different LGBT groups that maybe were operating separately and just, you know, doing their own thing, I've seen a lot of them come together, whether it's like, you know, the campaign, the banned conversion therapy yeah. campaigns, for example, the many, many open letters that have been written for the many, many things that have come up over the last few years as well. And just seeing that unity, I think, when you've got certain organisations that are just out there actively to, you know, create division and hate against the certain... the LGB Alliance, for example, are just one yeah. example of many that are happening now. And it's great to see all of the other LGBT organisations seem united and stand united, yeah. I think.
Yeah, agreed. And the movement is united. It's completely united.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that doesn't mean that we all kind of agree with each other about absolutely everything, but we have a shared purpose. We work together in a really kind of fluid, respectful way.
Yeah.
You know, people have been so, throughout the movement, have been so supportive of me. I hope I've been that for them as well. Mm. You know, it's a movement, I think, that is stronger than it has been for years and years and years. Mm. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's a really inspirational thing, you know?
Yeah. And I guess moving or looking forward, we should say, the Stonewall Free to Be strategy.
Yeah.
That was last year it came out, is that right?
Yep, that's right, yeah.
So I thought it was fantastic. Super clear, super, super bold, lovely little rebrand that you've got as well.
Thank you.
How is that going right now? And kind of how is it looking as well over the next few years? Because that runs to 2025, is
it does,
right?
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's going really well. I mean, we wanted to make a really bold statement. We wanted to make a statement that was about not accepting second best and saying, you know, that we believe it's possible for there to be a world where LGBTQ plus people are free to be ourselves, right? And can live our lives as we choose. So we wanted to sort of set that bar. And we wanted to also really focus in on kind of the communities that are most at risk. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of work, and we've talked about this a bit. We do a lot of work both in the UK and internationally, kind of fighting back against the anti-trans and anti-gender movement. But we've also had real success. So in Scotland, the mm-hmm. Gender Recognition Act reforms going through, and Stonewall Scotland has been a huge part with mm-hmm. Equality Network and LGBT Youth Scotland and other kind of key organisations in driving that agenda. So kind of we're having a lot of success around that sort of agenda. On conversion therapy, which is one of our priority areas, you know, it's choppy waters, but we've mm-hmm. gone from the government saying it won't legislate to mm-hmm. saying it will legislate. We know that even if a trans exclusive ban goes through at Westminster, which we're fighting really hard on, we know that the Scottish and Welsh government have said that they will fix mm-hmm. in their own domestic legislation anything that Westminster gets wrong. So that's hugely positive. When we look at refugees, we've been able to support a cohort of 60 LGBTQ plus Afghans and mm-hmm. now their families to come here to the UK and settle. And we continue to work on supporting LGBTQ plus Afghans to survive where they want to get to safety. So we're starting to have some kind of real traction. We're really hopeful that the new women's health strategy will include a commitment to IVF for all. So we're mm-hmm. it's difficult times, but we're making progress, which is fantastic.
No, it's honestly so great. There's so many things that's been, like, especially I think the asylum seeker work that Stonewall are doing as well. Mm-hmm. It's just none of that gets seen because there's always, it's like firefighting other issues that need to be there. And there's so much other incredible stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes say when I talk to people about what we're actually doing, and people go, well, "You need to talk about that." And I'm like, "I do talk about that, but I can't really kind of compete with the megaphone that is the UK press, right?"
So,
but it matters that we keep telling those stories, and more importantly, it matters that we keep doing the work. So we had just the week before last the new Keeping Children Safe in Education. Mm-hmm. Guidance came out, safeguarding guidance for schools, super important. And it had two things in it that were really important for the first time that we'd been pushing for years, actually. And one was a really clear statement that being an LGBTQ plus kid isn't a safeguarding risk. Mm. That seeing a trans child, seeing a lesbian child, seeing a bi child, etc., that teachers shouldn't go, oh, you know, I should be worried about that child mm-hmm. because of who they are.
Yeah.
And the other thing that it really acknowledges is the fact that we are at increased risk of abuse. So you need to kind of think about not the child's identity as a problem, but understand them as an at-risk kind of category and really care for them. And just things like that kind of go unnoticed. But the team worked so hard to make that happen, and it will make a really big difference to LGBTQ plus kids in schools. So, with my tiny megaphone, we'll keep telling the story.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned the word hopeful, because I guess when I think of Stonewall at the minute, or I think of, you know, the plethora of media coverage, it can seem like it is just all doom and gloom. But that fact that you, like, there is this future strategy and you're looking forward and there is this hope towards change, I think must be quite... I don't know what the word is, but it must have a certain benefit to the staff even working at Stonewall.
Yeah, I mean, I think on one level, it's really hard to work in the movement at this point in time. But on another level, so for me, as a queer person, as a lesbian, you know, I get to fight. And that in itself is helpful, right? You know, I think if I didn't have this job at this point in time, I know my wife... She sees all the same stuff as me. She reads all that stuff. She's devastated by it. You know, she feels helpless, right? What can you do? And so there is something freeing about the fact that you're in a position to fight. You're in a position to try and do something about it. You're in a position to try and make things better. And you don't win everything. You don't win all of the fights, but you win some of them. You move forward, you move the rock forward. Mm. So there is something I think really, really motivating and energizing about all of those things. Mm. I probably shouldn't say this publicly, I will. I joke about how we're a bit like a cockroach. Like, there was last Pride Month. Bear with me.
Yeah.
So last Pride Month, we sustained just extraordinary levels of media attack. It was basically like the media was trying to shut Stonewall for Pride Month.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what was happening.
Yeah.
And we are still here, and we're still working. We're still kind of working for change, and that gives you a real power. You're like a kind of post-apocalyptic cockroach. Stepped on me, but we're still kind of cockroaching around, sort of thing. But that sort of surviving has always been, I think, a big part of how, as individual LGBTQ plus people and as a movement, a big part of our power has come from our ability to survive and just be like, we're not going to go away, and we're not going to shut up, and we're not going to sit down. And so I think that's really important as well.
And you mentioned there just about you personally, not just as you as a part of Stonewall, but you personally have come under attack from lots of vocal anti-trans commentators and trolls online. And we see a lot of listen to women phrases being thrown around, which is until a woman who has trans supportive views.
Not that woman. Speaks. Definitely don't listen to that woman.
Yeah.
Listen to lesbians, not that lesbian.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with all of that?
So I think when I first took the job, you don't know how you're going to feel about it. I think it's one of those things that you don't know how you're going to feel till it happens to you. And I didn't know how I was going to feel. And And I feel all right about it is the answer, actually. Mm-hmm. So I have my tweets locked, which makes trolls online very mad with me. And they quote tweet a lot going, you are scared of debating, you have your tweets locked. And I locked them basically because when I first took the job, so people still abuse me, but they can't do it in a big long reply line under every single tweet that I make. And the reason I did it is when I first took this job, basically, in the first month, this thing was happening where I would like come home and I would have like a bunch of flowers from a friend and I'd be like, what? Why are you sending me flowers? Right. And then I would realize that there were like 200 replies on a tweet about shoes, basically going, you are a traitor to women and you're disgusting and, you know, you're ruining Stonewall or whatever. And like my family started to get really worried about me and, you know, kind of give me the side eye about whether I should do this job and that kind of thing. And I just thought, I don't want to give people kind of a stage for their nastiness. Mm-hmm. So I locked my tweets and that really helped because it means my sisters and my mum and dad aren't as scared for me ever because they don't see it. They don't really check my quote tweets. And that's helped a lot. And I just think, you know, fundamentally, the majority of women hold trans-inclusive views. Mm-hmm. The majority of lesbians hold trans-inclusive views. Like, I'm not perfect, but I'm not unusual in the views that I hold. Mm. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I just think I mostly just don't look at it, basically. And when it's in the actual press, as in opposed to just randos online, although quite prominent people online also say nasty stuff about me. I kind of look at it once to know what it is, to know if there's anything real in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I kind of try and dump it out the side of my head. Because it's, you know, I'm not a perfect person, but I'm definitely not Satan or a betrayer of women or any of the cray cray stuff. I get a lot of old school misogyny as well. A lot of people calling me stupid and fat and stuff like that. I think I'm lucky in that it doesn't distress me quite as much as it does some people, but there was no way of predicting that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's, I'm pleased to hear that. And I know kind of in the past you've tweeted saying, you know, you've had a weekend away or you've done a little thing and you're feeling, you know, taking a little break from stuff. And it is super important to do that because so much of the shit online, I mean, there's like research to show that firstly, it's a tiny, tiny group that amplify the same shit.
And like, it's very obsessive.
It's super obsessive. And I think it has got to the point now where, like, I used to go down rabbit holes and I would see things and I'm like, how are people thinking like this? What can we do to, like, you know, try and unpick it or show that this is fake? But now it's got to the point where you read some of the tweets and you just think, that's just delusion. Like, there's no way to combat that. And I think that in itself is a comfort when you look at someone's feed and you see, you know, 8 hours of each day you're spending typing out very transgressive and trans phrases. Or just bizarre phrasing that you would never use in real life. And I think that's a comfort because it makes you go, oh, okay, that, do you know what? Actually, that's not someone that is in an okay, you know, state right now to be conversing about this.
They're not open for listening. I think there's something really, I mean, sort of, you know, it is definitely the case that online people are being radicalized into that way of thinking and behaving. There's no doubt about that at all. I mean, the literature on radical anti-radicalization stuff, super interesting. So it doesn't really work to argue with people. It works when people get a hobby. Like, good, it sounds like a diss, but it's not a diss. Like, when people have got repetitive behaviors, it's no different in other areas of psychology, really. Having positive things to spend your time on really helps people disengage. So I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I also just think that I benefit enormously, again, just personally. So I've got two young children and I give more of a shit about them than I do about anything else in the world by pretty big country mile. So they don't really, I mean, they sort of in broad terms understand that my job can be contentious, but you know, they still expect me to be 100% present and their mum at the end of a day, and that's brilliant for me.
Yeah,
because I close the computer and it's, you know, it's Dinka, my youngest, demanding that I face paint him, and so it's like this. You know, you kind of have to
priorities.
You have to just shift gear, right? Yeah. And that emotionally is so, I think, healthy for those of us that are exposed to the trash fire that Twitter can be sometimes.
Yeah. So to end on a positive, Stonewall has recently supported Jake Daniels as he came out as the UK's first LGBT professional football player in over 30 years. How does it feel seeing Stonewall have that type of impact as well? Because the coverage around that was amazing.
It was lovely.
Fortunately, yeah. It was really great. How does that feel? Because that goes way beyond the UK as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've been working through our Rainbow Laces campaign and our wider sports work for years to support all kinds of sports, but particularly football. We've been working with major clubs and including Blackpool for years and years to try and help them in their work to create the conditions where it feels okay for someone like Jake. So to be a small part of that story, particularly for some of my football obsessed colleagues, we've got quite a lot of those at Stonewall, has been amazing. And to see him be able to step forward at the start of his career, is, you know, a top flight footballer at the start of his career, to be able to sort of step forward confidently and say, this is who I am, and be well received. It's a beautiful thing, and it will have an impact, you know, across the world in football, but it will also have an impact across sports, because football is such a high profile sport. And I kind of loved the way that Jake spoke about it himself. You know, I love that for him, it was so much, such a positive thing. You know, we talked about coming out and then scoring a load of goals. You know, we talk a lot at Stonewall about kind of you when you bring your whole self to work, you're not just happier, but you're better at your job. And I loved hearing him kind of talk about that, but from a kind of footballing perspective. You come out to your mum and then you get back on the pitch and score a bunch more goals. And it was really, really a beautiful thing to have played a small part in.
No, it was so amazing.
Me and Matthew have spoken about, like, and there's so many other LGBT people that have the same view of PE and like things in school, and that seems like two different worlds that never made sense to be in the same kind of thing for me. But yeah, like you just said, like going and scoring a bunch of goals afterwards. I mean, that is a future that, I mean, I'd never thought I'd see. But also, I think that's incredible.
Yeah, me too. But the future is going to be full of many, many more sports queers. That's what this tells us. You won't have to choose between who you are and a sport you love. You'll be able to be both and do both.
Stunning. Maybe I should pick up some sort of...
That sounds a bit tiring.
So what should our listeners do to support any work that Stonewall does at the minute?
So we would love your support. It's really fantastically helpful. Firstly, you can support our campaigns. You know, if you follow us on social media, we are always asking people to write to their MPs or to write to ministers about things like conversion therapy or access to IVF. So please do sign up and follow us and kind of take those actions. Quite often we're asking people to share their story as part of campaigns, get involved and do that. If you're able to help us financially, we always love donations. We're doing big Facebook challenge for Pride 50 at the minute, so get involved in that way. But most importantly, actually, is to kind of to build your ability to speak up in your day-to-day life for all LGBTQ plus people. So it is fantastic if you support us at Stonewall, and we love it and we welcome it. But most importantly, look after yourself and support each other and stand up for each other. That's the thing that makes the difference.
Thank you again, Nancy. The rest of the team as well, like Neil, that made it happen. Thank you. We did forget this last week, didn't we?
Last episode.
Last week, last episode. We made the commitment in season 3 to end every episode with our positive thing of the week, and we forgot.
We did forget.
So we're bringing that back, and this is a recommitment to doing that. So, what is your positive thing of the week?
It's a cheat, so it's from last week. I had a lovely day with my mum. She came down to see me, and we had a gorgeous day. Yeah, we just wandered about, did some eating, some drinking, as per. But it was just really lovely. Yeah, really, really gorgeous time. So that is mine. What is yours?
I would say people listening know that me and you love Fortnite. Mm-hmm. What they don't know, because I haven't mentioned it, is my boyfriend doesn't like gaming at all. So Sam isn't a gamer. Doesn't get it. He said, doesn't like it. Not for him.
Boring.
Well, boring. Well, Sam, while we were away, he decided that he wanted to play Tomb Raider.
Decided. You brainwashed him, honey.
No, it was completely not me. It was literally all of his doing. He was like, yeah, maybe I'd like to watch it. Well, I guess I could play it. So there and then, I was like, okay, we downloaded it on the PlayStation app. Mm-hmm. Downloaded it the minute we got home. And he's already been playing it. He loves it.
Gorgeous.
So that is a gateway to Fortnite. So before we know it, we're going to be playing squads. All of us squadding up to play things. And that's my positive thing.
Wow. Took a turn.
That's your lot.
That is your lot. I hope you enjoyed it.
Also, if you didn't enjoy this episode, I imagine it's because you've listened purely because it was Nancy and Stonewall. Uh-huh. And we just got one thing to say to you, and that is, don't listen to us again, because honestly your views are vile. And if you scrutinise the episode, good for you. Get a hobby, grow up. There's bigger, better things that you can be spending your time on than trying to attack trans people. This is for you.
So you're talking about the listeners that came specifically to disagree with what yeah. she was saying. Okay, good.
Exactly.
Just thought I'd clarify. Yeah, yeah. Just in case yeah. mum gets offended by what no. you just said.
No, I'm speaking to the people that have sought this out because they are delusional. Don't forget, the 1st of July is the Gay Liberation Front March, mm-hmm. which is marking 50 years of the first march in London. It is not the official Pride in London march. That is the weekend. It is the more important one. It is going to be original members of the Gay Liberation Front, Black Pride are joining, I believe Trans Pride are joining as well. Don't quote me on that, but I believe they are.
Watching podcasts are joining.
Organizations. Yeah, we will be there with a microphone to just, yeah, hear what people are thinking and doing. But that is the one to be at. So 1st of July, I think it starts at Marble Arch at 1 p.m. We'll share details on our socials, but be there or be a homophobe. That's the phrase, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah. Okay, toodle pip, you've been great. Love ya. Take care.
Take care. You're doing amazing, sweeties. We'll see you in a few weeks.
You are doing amazing, sweetie. Kisses.
Bye. Kisses.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.